I've been speaking with our speaker, Kara Cohen, from AARP Massachusetts for a little bit, because I had the thought that there are many of us who are senior members or soon to be, and I, for one, don't know a lot about AARP. I always think about autos, you know, cars and that kind of stuff. And so I wanted to learn more about what they have to offer. And I also want to have a chance for Kara to ask us questions about our accessibility needs as well. So why don't you start, Kara, and then we'll take questions afterwards. Okay.
Sure. Sounds good. And I hope that tonight is very much conversational with, as you said, the opportunity for give and take. I'm really eager to hear your questions. And I don't really have prepared remarks where I'll be reading them, but I will be speaking from 20 years of experience working for AARP, the AARP Massachusetts State Office. So ideally, I'll speak for about 5 or 10 minutes and then see what questions you have, and then that'll lead me to share more that I'm sure you'll be interested in hearing. So I'll start off by saying that we are a small but mighty office. AARP Massachusetts is 10 people with an intern or two once in a while. And we cover the entire state with our work, which means that we will drive wherever our cars can take us. I was in Worcester on Friday. We do a lot of our work in the two targeted areas of Worcester County, the heart of the Commonwealth, and a lot of work in Greater Boston. And then I try to spread my team thin across the Commonwealth as well with virtual programming and showing up, supporting communities on the ground as well. So there's 10 of us. The state director, Mike Festa, is someone who's been with us for 10 years, a little bit over 10 years. Then we have our advocacy director, Jessica Cosentino, who's been with us for 25 years. And then she has a new advocacy person coming on just this week. And then I've got a team of three people plus myself doing outreach work across the state. So when you think of AARP, probably many things come to mind. Perhaps what comes to mind is, oh, they're the American Association of Retired Persons. Well, we used to be that. Probably 22 years ago, we changed to just AARP, just AARP. And believe it or not, still to this day, people will say the long name. Even newspapers will still say it occasionally. We cringe a little bit because we're really about just the four letters. And why is that? Because over time, a good percentage of our membership was still staying in the workforce. And there were too many issues having to do with aging that affect people well before they retire. And so we want to be the organization that's there for you as you get into your later years, but also as you might be doing caregiving for a loved one, as you might be wanting to figure out how to sharpen your workforce skills and stay in the workforce. So we're there for people well before retirement. In fact, I'll tell you a little story. There's this guy who a couple of years ago went on TikTok, unbeknownst to us, started trumpeting the fact that he had joined AARP. He's in his 20s. He went on TikTok, and you know what happens when you go on TikTok and you go viral. So because of him saying, I saved all this money joining AARP, who doesn't like to save money? We got thousands of people joining AARP who were well below age 50. So now when I'm out at events and I meet people who are little uncertain about whether or not they want to join, because I am 50, but I'm not that old. And I say, well, people in their 20s are joining, so what's stopping you, right? So, and I should say that as I tell you this story, my goal whenever I talk to people is not to convince you to fork over the $16 a year to become a member, because what we do for all, whether you are a member or not. We have free resources that don't require membership. We have some things that you can access with your membership online, but there's by and large 99% of the stuff that we offer on our website, in our printed publications that you can have sent to you. They're free to you whether you're a member or not. But that the bottom line is that most people see us as a membership organization. So when I'm at an event, I have to say, I'm not trying to convince you to join. I just want you to take a look at these wonderful free resources that I have that focus on health and financial security. And if you want one copy or you want 50 copies, we can get them to you for free. I was just at a few events in the last couple of weeks where people are always amazed at the amount of materials that we have. So I'm an educator at heart. I was an educator in the beginning of my professional life, and I see myself as an educator now, just at a different level with a different age group. And I think it's important to, when you're with an organization for so long, you have to sort of, it becomes part of your DNA. And so I want to share that our founder, AARP's founder, was a retired educator. So when she retired from being the first female principal in California, she looked around the landscape, the nonprofit landscape, and saw a need for an organization like AARP, an organization that would be there for people in their retirement years, and particularly at that point before Social Security and Medicare became part of the landscape, particularly before Medicare became part of the landscape. And so she founded an organization that was needed at the time so that people would be able to, at that point, get access to group health insurance in their retirement years. And so they wouldn't be indigent or without means to take care of themselves. So that was Ethel Percy Andrus's vision to start this organization. Initially, it was the National Retired Teachers Organization. Then it became AARP when more people wanted to join other than teachers. And here we are 65 years later, AARP here for people at many stages as they age. So I have more that I can tell you. I do want to stop and just start taking questions so that I can feel like it's more of a conversation and perhaps engage people.
Let me just start with one and then ask Danette to see if there are any hands raised. One of the things that confused me a little bit when I've looked for AARP Massachusetts. I'm not sure that you have your own website.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I also wonder whether you mentioned a lot of printed publications, which of course largely right. are not accessible to us. Right. I did want to say that on Newsline, which is a service where we can listen on the phone or go on an app, AARP Bulletin is on there.
Great.
But I don't believe there's any Massachusetts things per se.
Okay.
So I just wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, and then we'll see yep. if there are any hands.
Great. Great. Is the AARP magazine also available on Newsline?
I think it is. Yes.
Okay, good. So, right. So we have the AARP magazine and the AARP Bulletin. They come out every other month, and it's good to know that they're available on Newsline. We also have an AARP app. So I don't know if this is necessary given what you just said, but on the app, there's a read aloud feature for both publications.
Okay.
And that's available to members. So you can download the app and enter your start a profile. And then, so I think that's the accessibility there. The AARP Massachusetts website, I'm surprised you haven't been able to find it just Googling it. So that concerns me. So I'll check that out after today's call. It's aarp.org/MA.
Okay.
That's the state website. And I am somewhat certain that there's not a accessible portion. Bear with me here. Let me just check on this. So that's our state website where you have all the latest state information. And how would that be accessible to you is my question.
It would be accessible if we're on the computer, it would be with what's called a screen reader.
Okay.
For those of us who don't have any vision. And for those of us who have some, There's something called Zoom Text, which allows people to enlarge what's on the screen. Mm-hmm. And also, people can access it on their phones with Safari by listening. There's something called VoiceOver on the phone.
Great.
Okay.
I'm aware of that.
Great. Okay.
Good. So our state focused information does not come across in a printed fashion like the AARP bulletin or the magazine. So if you want to stay up to date on what we're doing at the state level, you go to our state website that I just mentioned. And
do you have a newsletter like a monthly?
Yeah, we don't. We did years ago, but it just was hugely expensive to send to 750,000. So we have 750,000 members, which it actually ends up, I think we have around 450,000 households. So can you imagine how expensive that would be for us to do?
No, yeah. I mean electronically.
Electronically, yes. That's so, but there you go. So I've been here long enough to tell you that we tried to do it print, and now we do an email that we send out once a week, which has updates on what we're doing. And that email, when you go to our website, you can sign up to register on AARP.org. So one thing I would say is, again, using your screen reader, you'd go to the top of either AARP.org or AARP.org/MA, and you would register. So you click on the register button, which is a little bit down the bar. And once you do that, you enter in an email that you typically use, and then your password. And then you can check which e-newsletters to get. There's about 20 different ones.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you could get pretty specific. I'm trying to log myself in because I have to have my own password
This is for all of AARP, not just AARP.
Yes, but when you go there, so AARP Massachusetts, I'm going to just test my what I'm going to tell you here. So when you go in there, So I want to tell you that there's 20 newsletters that you can click on, and there's one that says, sign up to hear about upcoming news and events.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Danette, I believe we have some hands.
We have one. Yes, we do. Russ okay. Andrews, you can unmute.
I am unmuted. Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My question is, are there any discounts available or recommendations for dentists in the area?
So I am not trained to know all of our discounts inside and out, and that is by design. That's the for-profit side of AARP. I'm on the nonprofit side of AARP. What I can tell you is that if you go to our website and you look at the bar that I was just talking about, you go to membership and benefits. If you go there, okay. Then you can yep. take a look at anything health related, which is what you're asking about. And you can see, so there's, yeah. there's definitely, there's a dental and health column that I think I just saw here. So you can check that out. And that's about all I can tell you. But it's a good question. We fought hard for dental coverage about 10 years ago. I think we were able to do it in Massachusetts in terms of a dental insurance plan.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Mary, you can unmute.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here tonight. Wondering if you could talk about, I don't know whether this is in your area of expertise, but talking about just overall the kind of advocacy that AARP does.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah. So it is our bread and butter and why Ethel Percy Andrus wanted to found this organization as well. We do state work and we do federal work. The federal work, for example, we're seeing the benefits now of having finally won in the prescription drug arena. So we have people who are now able to access insulin at lower rates. We have closed the donut hole in the Part D prescription drug plan. We're you know, keeping an eye on what Big Pharma is trying to do to pull back the Inflation Reduction Act that all of this is part of. So we're vigilant and working steadily on that end, on the federal end. We're also going to be working very hard to protect Social Security and make sure it's strengthened before 10 years from now, because 10 years from now, as many of you probably know, the Social Security program will only be able to give out 80% of benefits to people. And if any of you are retired and on Social Security, you earned 100% of your benefits and you deserve 100% of your benefits. And so that's what we're aiming to do, is make sure that Congress doesn't kick the can down the road too much longer in terms of coming up with solutions so that the Social Security Trust Fund is strengthened and everybody's able to receive 100% of their earned benefits. So that's going to be a long campaign that we're just gearing up for, and I'm looking for people to join in our efforts. We're going to start educating people so that people of all ages, every generation, is aware of the value of this program for all populations, survivors and disability. And not only that, but believe that it should be and will be there 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, because there's too many younger people who think, oh, it's probably not going to be there, I'm not going to count on it. No, we've got to fortify everybody's faith in the system, in the most important social insurance program ever built. And we got to make sure that Congress doesn't keep putting it off, and that they don't tear down or deteriorate parts of the program in any way, shape, or form. So that's one of our huge commitments. We will be very busy with that, I think. The presidential campaign will probably spend some time on it, and we're looking to make sure that it's brought up in a substantive way. And then on the state level, we just had some really nice wins in terms of getting money back in people's pockets. We were very pleased and quite surprised that the tax relief package finally passed in the last 2 weeks. So we're looking at a tax credit for a dependent child, disabled adult or senior, that's been increased from $180 to $310 in 2023 taxable year. And then, will be increased even more in the coming year. We're looking at something that some of you may be familiar with, the senior circuit breaker tax credit. That was increased from $1,200 to $2,400. Solid increase there for people who might be eligible for this tax credit. And then we also saw an increase in the rental deduction cap. That rental deduction cap is going from $3,000 to $4,000. And for example, impacts around 881,000 Massachusetts residents. So it's a huge impact there. And then we've got the earned income tax credit from 30 to 40% of the federal credit, helping 396,000 taxpayers with incomes under $57,000. So pretty impressive there. One more thing is we also were pleased that, and we've been working on this for a little bit as well, increasing the senior property tax volunteer program. A lot of people use that in their towns, and that was increased from $1,500 to $2,000. So huge wins with this tax package that the prior governor was not able to pass, and this administration just got passed. We're also working on the quality of nursing home care. Clearly, the pandemic brought to light how much work is needed in this arena. And so we're working steadfastly on that. And we're also looking to remove certain restrictions on the senior property tax deferrals, so that, again, people get more money back in their pockets. So those are some examples of what we're doing at the state level. And we have volunteers who work with us and provide testimony during hearings, and also who do congressional office visits with us. And we welcome new people all the time. Sorry for the long answer there.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Sharon?
Hi. Okay. I'm a victim of the windfall elimination of Social Security, which means that people who have a state pension only get a portion of their Social Security, even though they weren't working at the same, under the same system at the same time.
Yeah, it is definitely something we're keeping an eye on, and as we discuss Social Security solvency and how to strengthen the trust fund. You know, the reason that the GPO and WEP were created was to create more solvency, and so part of it is how can we argue that this is an unfair thing that impacts too many people in a number of states, and at the same time, how do we find more money to put in the Social Security Trust Fund so that there's more money available? Because essentially, you know, the trust fund would have to give out more money. Right. And I wholeheartedly understand, you know, the stance that, you know, it's money that you earned. Why should it be? Why should there be an offset? So, and my own spouse works for a municipality, so we've had this discussion at home too. So it's front and center. I just did an event on Social Security in Fitchburg on Saturday, and it was brought up there. And as it stands right now, you know, AARP is vigilant about that as well.
I have two other questions. One of them actually is about events and potential webinars that you might have.
Yeah.
Are those that are things, particularly now with Zoom, it's been a boon for us, especially when transportation is limited.
Yes.
So you do conduct those, right?
We do. Yeah. And that's where I want to learn from you a little bit. So for example, we just had a webinar tonight on retirement strategies. I swear we don't just focus on retirement stuff, but it just so happens that tonight was retirement strategies webinar. And so it's accessible to the extent that at least the speaker, what I've learned so far in getting feedback, and I welcome more tonight, is that as long as you're not relying too much on the slides, it could be accessible to people with the lowest vision, right? Obviously, the more your speaker can convey without slides, the better.
I would say that's true. Also, you can sometimes send an attachment later or beforehand.
Mm.
One thing I would like to say is that one of the platforms that is not very accessible is WebEx.
No, Zoom? We don't use that.
Okay, Zoom is good.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
My other question, though, is we feel pretty sure that there are many members who are beginning to have sight loss among the people that you serve. And how can we get the word out about what we do in Bay State Council of Blind? Obviously, you can't give us an email list or whatever.
No.
But could we even potentially do a webinar on blindness and low vision?
Yes. Yes, I would love to do that with you. That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. So we would then promote that. So we have a couple of ways that we promote things. Low-cost ways to send out an email statewide. And we have a 200,000 people who would receive that email. People who, you know, we have more members, but not everybody shares their email with us. And so that would be lovely. That would be something I'd really welcome.
I mean, and, you know, may take a little bit of time to put it together.
Oh, yeah.
Are your webinars, do they usually go for an hour or an hour and a half? Or
we typically do an hour. We occasionally do half hour ones. The Social Security one that I did a couple of weeks ago was an hour and a half because there's always so many questions.
Sure.
But an hour feels good. Sometimes a half hour is good too if you know, you're trying to do a noontime audience. So if it's an evening one, you know, we can assume that people aren't trying to fit it into the workday. So I'm just noting that that's something that we will follow up on with each other, right?
May I follow up with you on that? Are you the person for that?
Please. Or? Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I might put you in touch with somebody on my team after we, or at the same time, like we can have a joint meeting with somebody on my team who I would hand this off to. Yep.
Sure. And I'll mention it to our board that it's something that we're considering. Okay.
That's great.
Because I really think that, there are so many people, particularly because now you're serving people who are still in the workforce who end up leaving work because they think they can't do it anymore as their sight decreases. And with the right services, they might be able to. And
that's
really a shame, you know. And then there's people who have retired who may think that they might not be able to continue to live at home when they can, you know, with the right services. So, any other questions, Jeanette? Yeah.
No other hands are raised.
No other hands. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we do have an upcoming events flyer that I can send to you. Just as some examples of what you would see on it is, we have a Social Security event that was produced at our national office with two opposing viewpoints on how to strengthen Social Security from elected members of Congress. And that's recorded and available on demand now. I'll answer questions and then go back.
This is our president speaking.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good evening. Thank you for coming to speak to us. Of course, when we do advocacy, and I'm sure it's the same with you, we often try to, you know, do things in coalition with other organizations and advocacy. At the state level, what are some of the other organizations that you typically work with together when you lobby at state level for
a lot
for policy change?
A lot. Mm-hmm. So it could be the it could be the Nurses Association. It could be, because we focus a lot on caregiving. So as an example, we might work with Mass Home Care and the Mass Hospital Association we work with as well when we were doing the CARE Act a few years ago. The CARE Act has to do with when you go into a hospital, you're technically, they should say, ask you, do you have a caregiver that you want to name and someone who's going to take care of you and help you get healthy after you leave the hospital so that you're not having to be readmitted, so that there's proper continuum of care. And so we passed the CARE Act with the Mass Hospital Association supporting us. Our coalition members vary depending on the issue. So, you know, right now we're working to pass something where people who don't have access to 401ks in their workplace would be able to sign up for one through the state. And that is something that we call Work and Save. And we're doing that across other states in AARP's work across the country. And that one of our partners is the Pew Trust, you know, that's trying to forge this across the country. So our work with the Councils on Aging is another example of how we have a statewide reach, because the Councils on Aging are in all 351 towns and municipalities. Mm-hmm. So that's another example of an ally that we're always at the table with. But I'm curious as to what you were thinking about and how we could collaborate.
Well, I was just curious about what some of the other organizations are. And my underlying reason for asking is just thinking about if there are areas where we could form coalitions. You know, here at the state level, as well, my impression also, you know, we are we're the state affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. Mm. And my impression is that at national level, for whatever reason, ACB, as we're called, and AARP really have never worked together. And I may be wrong about that, but I think I'm sort of right. And of course, that strikes me as a little bit curious because, you know, as you know, the majority of legally blind people are people over 65 years old. So you would think it would be a natural coalition on at least some national issues.
Yeah, I would love to explore that with you, with my colleagues at the national office, and serve as a liaison between your national and as we work locally together. So I, you know, we're very, very committed to DEI and diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it would be we would be remiss if we didn't collaborate more.
Yeah, I mean, one area, for example, where I know we've been working at national level, and really haven't gotten much of anywhere as far as I know in, you know, 10 years or something like that, is, you know, trying to get, you know, certain you know, certain types of accessible medical equipment, mm-hmm. you know, covered by Medicare and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yep. we basically get nowhere on that. And you would think that that would be something where AARP would have an interest. I'm not sure if AARP has been involved in that, but
yeah, and this would be Medicare.
We need help because we don't get anywhere on that.
Yeah. Yes. Did you say you said Medicare, right? Not Medicaid.
Medicare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can definitely look into that. Mm-hmm. So, how would we do that?
Well, this is Sharon. We have an advocacy team, at our national office. And that might be a good place to start, or
Mary Erin raised hand.
Perhaps we could
Mary Erin raised hand.
Have a separate, you know, another meeting after this to kind of go over some of that. Go ahead, Mary. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And I was also going to say too, Sharon, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss.
Right, which I'm a part of. That's
right.
We have been trying to get together with AARP National for a long time, unsuccessfully. Mm. I can send you our website, link,
yep.
and have you take a look and be in touch with our president and our advocacy people, because much of what we fight at the state level is really a national thing too, you know, such as,
for sure.
Yeah.
For yeah. sure.
Yeah.
I actually think affiliate probably would be better. I mean, the AAVL would be.
To start, right, right. For instance, one of the things, in fact, there's a meeting going on about this right now, is the Older Americans Act does not have a designation in it for blind and low vision elders as a separate category needing service. Mm. And as a result, we haven't gotten nearly the money that we really need. A lot of it in the federal arena comes to vocational rehabilitation, which is people who are looking to work, but 85% of our population is not going to go to work for one reason or another, mm-hmm. either because they retired or whatever it might be.
Right,
and so they're not getting good service at all.
Right, right. I'm glad that you're bringing this up, and it just occurred to me. Are you able to send me a recording of this meeting as well?
Sure. I'm sure that Steve can once he
Great.
Gets it together. Great,
yeah. Yes. I'm taking notes and I'm counting on also the recording will help me more too.
Mm-hmm. Just, well, sure.
So I'm left thinking about how from your perspective this must be frustrating. Forgive the pun, but it definitely feels like we have a blind spot at the organization.
Oh, I think so.
And I think that in all honesty, and not to try to defend us, I think it just comes from a stretched capacity, because there mm-hmm. are so many issues that affect people as they age. But you could make a very strong case that that this is as important as our work to support dementia and related diseases. So, mm-hmm. Before coming to talk to you tonight, I've been trying to put myself in the frame of mind of someday I could lose partial vision as well. Whenever that happens, I would hope that people would be more attuned than they are now, that organizations and individuals would be more attuned to the needs of people who don't have perfect sight. So I'm glad that we're having this conversation. I feel bad because I've been with AARP for 20 years and this is not a new issue. So I'm just feeling like it's time. You know, the pandemic really pushed us to think beyond our norms. And I really hope that this is something that we'll try to do better on with you.
Right. Well, that's good. Danette, we have some more people.
Mary has a raised hand.
No, that must have been from earlier.
Okay. Linda, go ahead. Okay. So basically I'd like to know about, the email thing that you guys have, because I have a problem with you know, getting all kinds of mail from AARP that I can't read, and it's not an accessible format. So is it possible that any correspondences could be sent via email, you know, that you would normally send in print format?
Yeah, a lot of our webinars are promoted via postcards and the email. So I don't do any programming where we don't put it in an email form. And so once a week on Mondays, our emails come out. And so what I would encourage, if you are already an AARP member, you can call the number on your card and ask them to make sure that you're receiving emails. So make sure that your email is that you've opted in is the word. You should just say that you want to opt in to get emails. Because like I said, not all of our members have opted in. And so you can make sure that you're on that list to get our emails.
Okay. So would that be a good substitute for the print emails where you folks send people things about different causes that they want you to donate to and so forth?
Yes. And you can sign up for our advocacy alerts. So you can ask for that box to be checked as well when you talk to the membership folks. So you can, and we send out advocacy alerts. It depends on what's going on at the state and federal level, but there's been a lot. Like it's me at least twice a month we send out emails. Not certainly not weekly, certainly not daily.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd like to concur with Linda that I did get a lot of stuff from AARP when I was a member at one point that really discouraged me. Mm-hmm. Print stuff. I was like, oh God.
So discouraged you because it showed that we didn't know you and your needs, right?
Correct. Correct.
Right.
So we can fix that. Yeah.
Is there I don't know the answer to this question. When you become a member with AARP, can you say that you are a VIP?
What's a VIP?
Sorry, a visually impaired person.
I don't remember.
Yeah, that's something I'll check into because it should be something that we have in your records.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you want it to
be out of this conversation,
if somebody wants it to be, yeah. All right, David, your turn. Sorry.
Yeah. Back to state level coalitions and so on. I just wanted to mention just a few areas of advocacy that we work on that might be relevant to consider thinking about collaborating on in the future. One is we and others have been successful in advocating for a state budget earmark for additional funding for the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for what's called social rehabilitation training. There's roughly two categories: vocational rehab, which are people who are hoping to either get back to work or continue working, and social rehab, which is essentially the bulk of that are people over 65, seniors. And we've been successful at advocating, I think this last year, $1.2 million additional for that type of technology training for seniors. We've been working on accessible voting, both remote absentee, and we're now trying to work on also making sure that the voting machines that are 20 years old will be replaced by something, the appropriate types of machines. We're working on a paratransit, transportation accessibility and so on like that, and a few other areas. But, accessibility in general for, blind people, that's the name of the game for what we're doing. And I would think, again, some of that would be relevant for you. Hopefully also.
Yep. That all rings like it would be a good place for us to work together on. I didn't mention before, beyond caregiving being one of our big issues, having a lot of resources online for caregivers, both caregivers taking care of their loved ones, but also caregivers taking care of themselves. We also focus a lot on fraud and identity theft. And I was wondering how much of that is a concern in your community?
Explicitly, not something we really think that much about, but, we're always concerned about getting taken advantage of, ripped off. One area where where we have continuing headaches all the time is in making healthcare documentation accessible, whether that be, you know, online portals or documentation that people receive. And so people are often forced to, you know, for, I mean, HIPAA has, you know, there, of course, are excellent reasons why HIPAA exists, but it often means stuff can only be distributed to people in hard copy. So if you are blind, you have to share a lot of your health information, you know, with acquaintances, strangers, family members in ways that would be intolerable for sighted people. You know, we have no choice, though.
Right.
So, you know, healthcare is one area where, you know, accessible documentation from the various hospitals, et cetera, is a constant headache. And that must be the same for, you know, for many of your members who are, you know, either blind or, you know, they've lost a good amount of their vision.
Right.
And, you know, they need something in large print or, you know, regular print just isn't going to work for them.
Right.
And we really give, in that one area, we've been sort of stymied. You know, we've tried a few things. They haven't really worked. And of course, you need the muscle of an organization such as yours to get paid attention to.
Right. Right. I'm struck by the fact that part of what we're talking about is about making communities livable for everyone, including people with low vision. And so as we talk about AARP's commitment to age-friendly and livable communities, we have to make sure to be more inclusive of your populations. And we are having our annual conference on October 31st in Worcester at Holy Cross on age-friendly, dementia-friendly communities. And it is a full day. It's from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We'll be talking about best practices. We have 114 communities that have committed to being age-friendly across the Commonwealth. And as most of you may know, the state committed to being age-friendly 3 or 4 years ago. And so it's a good arena for you to be in. If somebody wanted to come, some of you wanted to come to that conference. It's listed on our website, aarp.org/MA. You can register before October 31st. It's free. There'll be some good food as well.
Okay. We have two raised hands. Sharon.
Hi. One thing that I heard you say a little while ago was diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah.
Well, we need to add accessibility to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has to happen routinely, and it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of consequences about this. We just heard the other day, for instance, here in Worcester.
5:46 p.m. Okay.
Oh, here in Worcester, that some of the job description for the new, help me out with this, Mary, because you were at the meeting. The Civil Rights Commission is not going to require that somebody be familiar with ADA.
Mm-hmm.
And so that says the city of Worcester doesn't care about people with disabilities.
Yeah, that was the chief equity officer.
Chief equity. Yeah. Okay.
Being the human rights and accessibility office.
Well, right.
Don't really have any qualifications or experience
with
issues.
So it's not in the job description, is what you're saying.
Not in the job description, no.
Yeah.
But that's
serious, you know.
Mm.
And I think you, as a large organization, can really model that DEI. We often, as a people with disabilities, we're the largest minority in the country, and yet we rarely come up in national conversations routinely.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening in all kinds of ways, that technology-wise and other ways, everything has to be retrofitted.
Mm.
And it's really, really annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Russ, you're...
Russ.
Well, no, I moved.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I believe I am.
Okay.
Yep.
You
are. Excuse me. Yeah, so, you know, our medical system is fabulous in many ways. You know, if I break my arm, I can go get that fixed, no problem. They're very efficient at that type of thing. But then there's the alternative medicine, acupressure, acupuncture, Ayurvedic medicine, and all of these things that are out there. There, many of them have been around for thousands of years. And yet our medical profession basically denies their existence. And I'm wondering if AARP is taking any kind of a stand around opening the minds of the medical profession around alternative medicines.
So in addition to changing and opening the minds of the medical profession, are you also thinking of having it be covered by health insurance plans and Medicare?
Sure.
That's like the ideal world, right? And as you said, they've been around for thousands of years, and there's merit that other cultures have found in this kind of medicine, and yet we continue to be very focused on Western medicine. So I don't know the answer to that. What comes to mind is our policy book, which so I'm going to send you a link to our policy book after this call. So that you can share it with folks. And it's searchable, and you can look up stuff like alternative medicine. You can look up vision and issues around vision. It's online. It's like a 500-page tome. We used to have copies in the office, and now we just have everything online. And so I don't know the answer to your question, Russ, but I would like to take a look with you and see where we stand. So there are times when our advocacy director will just have to go to that book or check with our national folks when an issue comes up, because we are pretty narrowly focused on 6 or 7 areas that we're hitting hard on. And then we might be called upon to participate on an issue that we don't focus on all the time. And so we don't always have the answer to all these questions.
Sure. Yeah, just wanted to raise the issue.
Yeah.
Because I use Ayurvedic medicine, and I was basically heading into a nursing home within 6 months. And because I found an Ayurvedic healer and their openness to helping me, even though I didn't have a lot of money. And so it saved me from having to be in bed 23 hours a day to being active and healthy again. And it was, you know, but it cost me like $500 every 3 months, which is really cheap compared to
nursing home.
If I went, a nursing home, oh my God, yeah, I'd have nothing left.
Yeah.
And, so there is a lot to be said about alternative medicine.
There is.
And there are quacks, no doubt about it. It's just like any profession, there's people that, you know, aren't upright and. So that's it. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing your good news story. And I've actually been very interested in Ayurveda myself, so it's nice to hear a direct example of how effective it can be. So I'll send the upcoming events flyer. The Age-Friendly Conference is on October 31st. We have the Caregiver Series coming up in November. We are also doing a teletown hall. So we do about 4 or 5 teletown halls a year, where we do outbound calls to our members. So we only have access to our members' phone numbers for this. We don't call out to non-members. So if you're a member, you might be in the cache of people that's called to participate in one of our topical teletown halls. It's just like a radio show, but on the phone. And this one in November is going to be on low-income heating assistance programs, LIHEAP. As we gear up for whatever kind of winter we're going to have. And we want to make sure that people are aware of programs that they can access to help pay for their heating bills.
Excellent. All right. Do you know if the flyer is a PDF? Is that how it gets sent out?
Okay. It's in Publisher. So I can try to turn it into a PDF. That's the best format for you, is a PDF?
Well, actually, Word is the best, I think, wouldn't you say,
Russ
David?
Andrews raised hand. Russell Andrews raised hand.
Okay, Russ.
Just a second, Russ.
Yep.
PDFs can be difficult.
Okay, Word is better. Word is better. Word publishers, is better. Publishers not good?
I don't know. What would you say, David? Can you jump in on this one?
I don't know what file format publisher actually is, like dot something or other. I mean, generally, I actually, during this session, I went to your webpage and I downloaded a sort of members benefit PDF and opened that and played around with it a little bit. Right. I would assume, you know, PDFs can be difficult, but PDFs can be very easy. I think generally things like flyers and so on generally wind up being PDFs, not necessarily Word documents, but generally Word is easier, but PDFs might work. It depends on the PDF. And I don't know what publisher really is. So
yeah, in the terms type of file looking format, at it, it says save as a publisher file. So it's a publisher is a type of program that you can do documents in. So worst case scenario, I send it to you and you send it back to me and I send it back in a format that's better for you.
Yeah, you could always send us one of them and we'll tell you what we think of it.
Yeah. Great.
I would assume without knowing anything about publisher that, you know, people prepare their document in that, however they prepare it. And I would be really surprised if it was not the case that then once it's time to actually publish it, that you have several different formats and PDF, I would assume must be one of those great formats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. We'll test it out together. Good.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to step in here for just a second on this issue and say that no matter what format you put the file in, the danger is if you, even with a Word document, if you scan in an image, that file will be unreadable.
Gotcha.
So make sure that it really is honest-to-goodness text, and that will alleviate a lot of the accessibility problems, whether you do it in PDF or in Word.
Gotcha. That's a good learning there. So even QR codes would be an example of an image that if I deleted those out before I send it to you.
Well, the QR codes won't get in the way.
No, they won't.
They won't get in anybody's way. The difficulty would be if, and people have, I've seen this happen where people will take a piece of paper, scan it in, and save it as a Word document. But the Word document that you get is a picture of what's on the paper. And that screen readers don't know what to do with that.
Okay.
So that's what you want to be careful about. The QR code would not be a problem, really. You wouldn't even have to delete it. The point is to just make sure that the content that's truly information is readable text.
Good. And I can send you however many links to different articles on our website, right? That's all good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you for elaborating on that, Steve. That's good. Okay.
Yep.
I believe Russ had a question, right?
Yes. You mentioned home heating assistance.
Yes.
And the last time I looked into that, it's actually home heating oil assistance. Mm-hmm. And most people now are heading towards mini splits, so electric heat, because it's much more efficient and less expensive to install. And, you know, propane, I heat with propane. I have mini splits, and there is no heating assistance for me, even though I qualify financially at times.
I'm just checking on the LIHEAP website right now. I did not think it was just for oil. By the way, even if you're renting and you don't pay for heating assistance, you can get assistance.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's changed in the last.
Yeah,
it's been quite a while since I looked at it. Oh, I don't have heating oil. Okay, there's no help for me. You know.
Let's check that out. And so the LIHEAP website, if you just Google LIHEAP on mass.gov, I think that's probably the best source of information, but I think that it would be available for you.
Is that W-H-Y-H-E-A-T?
Oh, yeah, L-I-H-E-A-P. So low income heating, home energy assist. So LIHEAP, sorry.
Okay, if you could send that link along with the other information.
Yes, I will. Okay.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. For sure. And I will, you know, so on our state website, there's the blog post about all of those tax relief policies. But I will send you a link to it as well so that it stands out more because I put out a lot of stuff there.
Great. Great. Yep. Thank you.
Pardon me. I'm not too used to this, but I wonder if Sandy has a question.
Russell Andrews says,
were you trying to raise your hand, Sandy?
Yes, I was.
Okay, good.
The first thing I can say is I use the heating assistance every winter. So yes, I heat with gas. My whole house is natural gas.
Right.
And I'm still able to do that. There was something else I was thinking of. Also, thank you for the senior circuit breaker. That's a strange name.
Yes,
but I'm glad it's increased. Because the only reason I do an income tax, actually, is because I was told I qualified 1 year for circuit breaker. So I keep going back and doing it every year.
That is awesome. Yes. I mean, we have people who don't file, and then they find out that they can, and they get 3 years worth of the tax credit back.
Wow.
Well, a windfall.
I think that. Well, that was never my case, although I switched where I was going to do my taxes. And when I originally was going somewhere that had to do with the senior center and they trained volunteers,
yes.
Nobody ever told me about that at all.
About the retro.
And then during the pandemic, when that wasn't being done there, I switched to another agency and all of a sudden I'm learning all about the you're eligible for the tax.
Oh,
I have to save my property tax and my water bills, and they look at all those, and there's some sort of formula they go by.
Yeah, I will send you the link to the AARP Foundation tax aid program that you just referred to. I'm hoping that this is not the case, that it sounds like we may have had a volunteer who wasn't fully up to date at the senior center. So all of our volunteers are placed at the senior centers, by and large, a couple at the libraries. But the AARP Foundation Tax Aid Program sounds like they might have failed you there for a minute.
I'm not positive, but the last like three years, I have been getting the $1,200, which is very helpful.
Yes.
There was something else you mentioned. I don't remember the whole name of it, but something about some sort of volunteer.
Yes, the Senior Property Tax Volunteer Program.
Yes.
Yes.
What is that?
Mm-hmm. So if you volunteer for your town, if they have a Senior Property Tax Volunteer Program, they will take money off your owed property taxes. And it's now up to $2,000. So that's something to look into if there was an interest on your parts.
Okay. And do you guys do anything in Western Mass where I am?
Does AARP?
Yes, I'm in Springfield.
Oh, Springfield. Sure. So we have volunteers in the tax aid program across the state. We have volunteers who are advocacy volunteers all across the state. We have executive council members that are spread across the state. So we try as best we can to be not Boston-centric.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So I can send a link about our volunteer programs as well. So you can take a look at that.
So what
good,
we'll do,
thank
we'll
you.
Have, Kara will send me links and I'll put all of them out to the announce list so that people can take advantage of everything they need to have. Okay. Russ, you had another question?
Yes, thank you. When I went to my senior center, because I own my home and it's a duplex, they were unable to help me with my tax filing.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's AARP.
Well,
or if it's just something that our own senior center has put together as far as doing taxes.
My understanding has been that our volunteers were not trained to do sophisticated investment tax returns, but just owning a house, owning your own house.
Yes.
That should not preclude you from having your taxes done by an AARP volunteer.
Yeah, I believe that's what they told me. I don't know if they're AARP. I can check with them.
Check on that, please. And just got a dry throat there for a minute. I would say I'd be concerned if that was the case. So please keep my email handy and shoot me an email if you remember and want to. I'm at kcohen@aarp.org. That's kcohen@aarp.org. I'll make sure that you have that in everything that I send you, of course.
Great. All right. Thank you so much.
Well, I think we're about at time, unless there's any other burning question. I don't want to keep Kara too late, but this has been really wonderful. And I think that we'll have a lot of interaction with you and your team. And I'm just so grateful that we're starting a real dialogue here. It's good.
Me too.
Thank you.
Me too. I'm grateful as well. Really appreciate it. This has been the best 8 o'clock meeting I've ever had.
Okay. Thank you all.